It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the Exterior Home Solutions VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Austin Price, and Brent Hubbs. Exterior Home Solutions phone number is 865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted source for a garage, repairs, siding, roofing, exterior improvements to your home since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. All right, Tennessee sits at 8-1 on the season, 5-1 in Southeastern Conference play. The big one is coming up this weekend on the road in Athens against Georgia. A lot of injury concerns and just a pretty interesting matchup altogether, coming off a win over Mississippi State this past weekend where Tennessee handled business 33-14. Tennessee basketball is in session as well. We'll touch on a little bit of everything. But first, I guess the biggest story of this week, guys, and it's something we just have to take it day by day by day, Brent, is of course the injury situation with Nico. He's your quarterback, Dante Thornton, wide receiver, Andre Carrick, some of these other guys that got banged up. Won't know for sure. First injury report comes out on Wednesday, but it truly is going to be a day by day thing that we're going to have to pay attention to.
Yeah, and listen, it's I'm not blaming any coaches anywhere, but because of how injuries have been talked about for the last, I don't know, 30 years or so in college athletics, you're just not real sure, right? Josh Heupel saying on Monday that Nico was with the team and certainly indicated that he feels like he's going to be ready to go on Saturday. But we all have heard those before, right? That guys are ready and then they end up not being ready. So we're just going to have to wait and see where it's at, see how much he practices on Tuesday and Wednesday based on what we can find out. And, you know, see where Dante Thornton is and all those things. Because right now, you know, in a coach's mind, Austin, the answer to always say is everybody's going to be available, right? And then, you know, thankfully we have the SEC availability report that puts a little more clarity on it on the back half of the week.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I do think that keeps coaches in check to a degree. Now with that said, they're still going to play some games. Will that guy right there be the guy Tennessee's calling upon to go try to win a game in Athens, Georgia on Saturday? We'll see. I mean, I know what Josh Heupel said on Monday. I'd be cautious with that just based off the fact that, you know he's not going to give a whole lot away. I think this still boils down to, you know, can Nico pass protocol? And if he passes it, he'll play. And, we've talked about, everything will be good to go. If he doesn't, then Tennessee will be a two-quarterback team, a walk-on and a true freshman. So, we all knew that this was always a possibility. You probably just didn't want it to happen on the road going to play Georgia with their current predicament needing a win as well. So, we'll kind of see where it all goes. But I think it just boils down to, the battery of tests that they'll put him through the next several days.
Yeah, I mean, we all kind of talked about this, earlier on Monday. Like, it's not one of those things to where it's a pain tolerance thing with other injuries. It's if you're cleared, you're good. If you're not cleared, you can't play. It's just kind of one of those things. Kind of on that note, Rob, say Tennessee is without quarterback Nico Iamaliava. What did you see from Gasson Moore in the second half against Mississippi State in that win where Tennessee outscored the Bulldogs in that second half? That gives you confidence that Tennessee – I mean, it's not everything's great and everything's fine, but it gives you confidence Tennessee can go down there and obviously compete and make it a ball game and try to pull out a win.
That sounds like a fairy tale to me. I mean, this is no disrespect to Gasson Moore, who probably, I don't know what everybody's walk-on quarterback situation is, but if he's not in the top, 5 or 10%, in the country, I'd be surprised. This is no disrespect to Gasson, but, I mean, I think realistically, you have to have Nico. I mean, I no matter who's a quarterback, I think Tennessee's defense will give them a chance to win, but you're going to have to move the ball, change field position, put some points on the board. So, I thought Gaston looked great for, a walk-on quarterback in the second half there. I mean, Mississippi State's, not a world beater, but that's an SEC football team that has, scored some points and been competitive in games. And, with Gaston under center in the last two quarters, Tennessee, outscored them 13-7.
It's almost like, Brent, if that were the case, and again, we'll see, on Nico, and we'll get back to, bigger conversations, but it's almost the case where if you are going down there rolling with Gasson Moore as your quarterback, like, run game has got to be on. Rush defense has got to be on. Defense has got to play like it's been. You got to pick up third downs. Like, it's almost like everything has to align, I don't want to say perfectly, but if you do all that, then I think you absolutely have a chance to win the football game as long as, Gasson Moore doesn't turn over the football. But to Rob's point, I mean, I agree, like, you need your starting quarterback to really feel good about this win.
I would say this. I think if Nico plays or whoever the quarterback is, you got to have all those things. I mean, you're not going to go down there and be one-dimensional on offense because, again, Nico's had some moments, but it's not like he's lighting it up for 300-yard games in the SEC, right? I mean, they've had their issues in the passing game with Nico at quarterback. Some of that's been him. Some of that's been the receivers. Some of that's been protection. You know, you got to be able to run the football. And Tennessee, aside from one big run by Jalen Wright last year, has been very pedestrian at best running the football against Georgia. Now, this is a different Georgia team, but this is the same Georgia team that, I mean, Ole Miss's leading rusher in their win was Jackson Dart, the quarterback. The leading rusher, the most yards that Georgia's given up on the ground this year has been to Jalen Milroe, a quarterback. So can Tennessee, in a traditional sense, run the football against Georgia's defense between the tackles where Tennessee likes to run it? Can they get some things done? We'll find out. Mississippi State scored 31 points against Georgia, and they did it through the air. They threw the football effectively on them. So we'll see. But I think, you know, Tennessee's got to have some balance to take pressure off whoever the quarterback is. They've got to do something they haven't been able to do very much against Georgia, and that's they got to be able to line up and effectively run the football and move the football on the ground.
Yeah, Austin, I was going back and looking at scouting the opponent that Rob wrote from back in the summer and looking at Georgia. And, you know, there was a couple paragraphs in there. You know, Rob was saying, you know, Tennessee's been able to effectively move and score on everybody they played except Georgia under Josh Heupel. You know, he wasn't 100% in that second half, but that guy right there, Dylan Sampson, Tennessee's got a really, really good running back. Georgia's pretty decent at defending the run. It's not top two or three nationally like it has been in years past, but it's not bad. What's your confidence with that guy right there, or Dylan Sampson, in running the football down there in Athens this week?
Honestly, it's not real good just based off the recent track record against Georgia, as pointed out by Rob and the stuff in the summer and you know everybody else. I mean, it's just they're the one team that's given Josh Heupel and the offense, you know, fits. And so even if they're down a little bit, maybe they're not as good, maybe they're not as deep, they're still good. They still have a scheme that has been really good against Tennessee. And so I think you're going to have to throw it to loosen them up. And so that means completing passes. That's why, you know, at the end of the day, you really want number eight to be back there. Not that's a knock on Gaston Moore, but I just think that there's a ceiling to his game. And so, you know, I think for Tennessee offensively, they need to have happen what the offense, you know, really doesn't need to have happen to them, which is Tennessee's defense needs to get, you know, a turnover to get Tennessee's offense a short field. And, you know, Brent's talked about this ad nauseum. Their ability to cash in the red zone is key. Like score touchdowns. Like if you get inside the 10, like you did last Saturday night to go run, and turn it over at the half yard line. Like that's, you can't do that this weekend. Like, and I don't even think the field goals matter. I think, you know, don't get me wrong, I think getting him back on track was big for a game like this. But
you didn't beat Alabama last year kicking field goals.
Correct. You have to score touchdowns. You've got to find ways to convert them in, whether that's manufacturing on special teams, defense, or doing it traditionally on offense.
Squirrel White got in the end zone for the first time this season against Mississippi State. I thought that was good to see. Dante Thornton looked good. Of course, he is the big play target, and he's a bit banged up right now. Josh Heupel was encouraging about him on Monday, but again, kind of wait and see. Rob, how important is it, in your opinion, to have Deshaun Bishop available for this game? He missed last week's game, but you know he's gone on the road. He doesn't have a whole lot of experience, but he's got more than Peyton Lewis does. And going on the road and you know pass pro and playing in those environments to help Dylan Sampson, who was banged up last week and still carried the ball a career high 30 times.
Yeah, I think it's big to have Deshaun healthy. I mean, I think the staff has confidence in Peyton, but still, I mean, that's a really big spot to put a true freshman in, you know, on the road. You just mentioned, and it's pass protection, you know, what I think I would be worried about, and I'm sure the staff is. I mean, just harking back to, you know, 2 years ago when Dylan Sampson was a true freshman and, you know, got Hendon Hooker decapitated at LSU and then disappeared for about 3 or 4 weeks from the lineup. So that'll be key. And circling back to another guy you mentioned, Eric, I think it's huge for Dante Thornton to be available because You know, I don't mean to be pessimistic. I don't see Tennessee. I don't think he's driving the ball 8, 10, 12 plays, running the ball through the tackles. I mean, they're going to win. I mean, how many big plays did Ole Miss, you know, hit? Just, you know, huge chunk plays, you know, in the middle of the field, down the field. I mean, I think Tennessee's going to have to do that repeatedly to score points. And because of that, I think Dante Thornton is a big deal this week.
And Brent, Tennessee had 3 explosives for touchdowns against Mississippi State. Now, 2 of those, you had Nico throwing the football, but that was good to see because in the previous 4 games, Tennessee didn't have many at all. And so good to see the explosive plays return back for this offense.
Yeah, I mean, that's a state defense that's given up a ton of points, up a ton of yards. They were going to play man coverage. Tennessee took advantage of it, got, you know, drew penalties and obviously made some plays there. You know, that I asked this question to Josh Heupel on Monday, and I ask it with the idea of, you know, what Georgia's been able to do to Tennessee's receivers the last couple of years, and that's just lock them up. I mean, you know, you go back even to that 22 game. I mean, I think Georgia was penalized 3 times in the first half for holding on the defensive back, grabbing Tennessee's receivers, and then they just kind of swallowed the whistle, and it just was that way the rest of the game. Can Tennessee be physical enough to get off of press coverage when Georgia elects to play it? Can Chris Brazel beat press coverage? Can Squirrel White beat press man coverage if he gets it? What does that look like if you've got, you know, Mike Matthews on the field? We know what Brew can do. I mean, he's physical enough to do it, but can Tennessee win enough physically one-on-one on the perimeter if that's the way Georgia elects to play you? And right now, it would not surprise me if Georgia plays it that way. And if Gaston Moore's the quarterback, they're absolutely going to play you that way. So can you win press coverage on the outside? I think that's a question mark that we had about this receiving core in this matchup, even in the offseason. Now, after seeing this receiving core play for, 9 games, I think that's a question, certainly a valid question moving forward.
Let's flip it over to Tennessee's defense, Austin. You look at Georgia, they can't run the football, 15th in the league. You know, Carson Beck can throw it all over the place, but he's been turnover prone this year. Offensive line injuries in front of him certainly haven't helped. He's got 12 interceptions. I believe I saw a stat the other day to where in the last 6 games, he's turned it over 14 times. If Tennessee, Austin, just plays defense the way we've seen it play for the majority of the season, I mean, it's going to make things really, really difficult for Georgia in that offense to even score the football. So I think it kind of goes back to the conversation, what feels different about this year in this matchup? Well, Tennessee's defense is good, and you know, the offense for Georgia's regressed a little bit, and I think that's going to be something that keeps Tennessee in the game for 4 quarters, regardless of who's playing quarterback for the Vols.
You guys see any Georgia players celebrating in there? for those people not watching on YouTube, they have the picture up of the postgame celebration. You know, I agree. I mean, I do think the way Georgia plays offense, Tennessee's defense is better suited to face a traditional type offense that, you know, kind of, you know, 2 tights and, you know, tries to get north-south and goes under center a bunch. And, you know, Beck is, you know, for the most of his career, he's been super accurate, but he has been turnover prone of late. He's been rattled a little bit of late. He's not very elusive. And so Tennessee's ability to get to him, even if they're not sacking him a bunch, which obviously that would be huge, but get to him and alter, you know, his ability to make plays and make him throw off platform and make him flushed and rush his progression. I think that, you know, goes a long way in this football game. I do think Tennessee will do a nice job against their running game. Georgia is not as dynamic at tailback, not as dynamic at tight end as they have been. Georgia has never been super elite at receiver outside of George Pickens since Kirby's been there. They've had good players, good, really good players, but they've not been, you know, like just, there's nobody you just feared, right? Like, you know, outside of Pickens. And so, you know, I don't think they're that way this year. So I do think Tennessee's defense has a chance to make some plays. And I think it all, this is, you know, this is a Rodney Garner type game. This is a James Pierce type game. Like those players that play for Rodney, if they play well, Tennessee's defense is going to play well, which means Georgia won't score a ton of points, which means, again, Tennessee will be in this football game deep into it.
Yeah, and to your point, Austin, when you look at this, I mean, Carson Beck against – let's take, you know, the one interception away, and I think he had the fumble too, but you look at him, I mean, Robbie's 20 of 31 for just 186 yards against Ole Miss. That tells you it's – it's a bit laboring in the passing game for them, right? They're not splashing it up with a bunch of big plays, and Tennessee's secondary's been good. I mean, Georgia feels like they have to drive the football more than they have in years past because there's not Brock Bowers to run down the middle of the field, right? Some different things there. This certainly feels like a different Georgia offense right now than what you've seen the last 3 years.
100%. And I, you know, we talked about it earlier. I mean, I think, you know, Beck is catching some heat, you know, from the pundits for, you know, the turnovers, you know, those numbers are real. I mean, you can't hide from that, but man, he's not getting a lot of help. I mean, you mentioned Brock Bowers. I mean, there aren't any dudes like that on this offense. I mean, Hubbard, had 30 over 30 pass attempts and threw for less than 200 yards. I mean, that, you know, he's not got a lot of time to look downfield, and he's also not got dudes that are taking an 8 yard slant and making it a, you know, a 32 yard gain like they've had in the past. And like you said, it's just hard. It's weird to kind of say, but I think Tennessee's defense, I think Tim Banks can play this game the way that Georgia has played Tennessee in the past. And, you know, kind of, I'm not saying be conservative, but, you know, wait for them to make a mistake because, you know, you're not terribly worried about them. You know, something happened. It's going to be a much different game, I think, than it has been in this series. But two best defenses in the league, arguably. I mean, Ole Miss is certainly up there. Texas is up there. But by a lot of metrics, it's Tennessee and Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Georgia team that has scored 24 points in the first half against Tennessee the last 3 weeks or the last three matchups.
That will happen this year.
Yeah, I mean, nothing feels like that's going to be the case, Eric, in this matchup. I mean, there's nothing to indicate that would happen given what Tennessee's been able to do defensively all season long.
Yep, and that's why that line on Monday was at 48.5, expecting a low-scoring football game, and it could be even lower than that. I think something that also kind of bodes well for Tennessee, you know, we talked about it after the game on Saturday, Austin. You know, whenever Tennessee's looking for an advantage, and, you know, especially if you're down a few players, boy, Tennessee's return game was really good the other night. Special teams overall, Gilbert getting back on track, you know, Jackson punting the football, Tennessee's coverage units, Peyton Lewis returning, you know, kick return, William Wright even once, but man, Boo Carter saved the offense a lot of yards the other night. Now, he's got to learn to be smarter at points and times, but even on one, when he went up and got that ball that was, you know, kind of over his head and then ducked out of bounds, I mean, he saved Tennessee 20 yards on that play. And, of course, the 3 points before the half, you know, a large part of that's because of Boo Carter's 23-yard punt return. That dynamic, I think, is going to help an awful lot.
Well, you have to win with special teams, especially if you don't have all the bullets in your gun on offense. And so that means, you know, getting, you know, good returns. That means being good in your coverage units. That group's been better since they had about a game and a half stretch where it was just like, who are these people? Like, they had been unbelievable since Mike Eckler got here in that regard. And all of a sudden, they were due for some kind of weird game, right? But yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, you know, Jackson Ross flipping the field, Jackson Ross pinning Georgia inside the 10, all those things, you know, are needed in a game like this because, you know, if you're talking about it being a defensive game, that means there's going to be more punts than normal. And so, you know, the ability to flip the field, the ability to pin somebody deep could be the difference in, you know, getting a stop and getting back a short field for your offense, getting a turnover deep in your own territory like Tennessee did in their last win down there in 2016, or, you know, a number of different factors in special teams.
I'll be curious to see what they do with Boo Carter in this game. Is he going to be back there? You know, it's on the road for the first time. Where's the trust factor there? Here's the other thing, too. Georgia is from a coverage standpoint, teams have a negative yards for the season in returning punts. That's not necessarily because Georgia's return or coverage teams are just dynamite, but their punter, the Thorson kid, who's punted for 1,600 years, it feels like, down there, is really good, and it's going to hang it up and hang it up high. So do you go in with this saying, hey, let's be aggressive back there, or do you go in this mindset of, hey, let's make sure we got the ball at the end of the play and we're going to kind of fair catch it and play it a little more conservative there? So I think that's going to be interesting to see, because Georgia has not given up anything in the punt return game all year long. And again, I think that's because of the punter's ability to hang the ball up. Mississippi State's punter was kicking them. He was kicking them low and in the middle of the field, you know, and it was like, hey, go get one here. Does Tennessee feel like they have a chance to even go get something in this game?
You know, Rob, I think that it might depend on, you know, who you have, you know, if, you know, who you have available to play this football game. But there's going to be points and times where you got to take some chances and create your own breaks, right? And that's where you can do it with a guy. Then I understand he's never, you know, been in that situation before. But I think you got to play that aggressive a little bit. Now, if you have, you know, Thornton and Carrick and Nico all back there on your offense and you're moving the football, then yeah, just make sure you're good. But if you need a spark, man, unleash the boo is what I'd say.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're talking about a guy that went for it on fourth and one from his own 10-yard line a few weeks ago because he was frustrated. I think he'll play. I think he'll have three return punts.
That is true. Last thing I want to say before we shift gears here, Austin, you brought this up earlier in the week as well. And I mean, it's obvious. Some of the great coaches of all time are just excellent motivators. Kirby Smart is a great motivator. Nobody was more frustrated on Sunday when that line came out than Kirby Smart, because how he's going to play this, everybody thinks we're awful. Everybody hates us. Everybody thinks we're no good. Yet you're in a 10.5 point favorite at home. But he's still going to get across to that team because he had him believing last year that they were not a very good football team. That was the perception, right? Backs against the wall for Georgia. You're playing at home for the first time in about a month. Kirby's going to have that team motivated, no doubt, this week.
Yeah, I mean, he is he's masterful at, you know, taking a team that was preseason ranked to win the national title and making them believe that, you know, people predicted them to go fifth in the SEC East back then when there was divisions. I mean, it's quite remarkable. You're right. It's like did he sequester the whole team this week, not let them see the lines 10.5? You know, I mean, like, you know,
he's not worried about it. They can't read speed signs.
Oh, Rob.
You know, I think that the question is, does there become a point where that doesn't resonate anymore? You know what I'm saying? Like, how much talk did you have? And I'm not saying he won't have a motivator. I think, look, they're going to be ready to play because they know what's on the line. They don't need a, you know, your manhood's at stake speech here. Okay. It's their first night game of the year at home. Like, everything's set up for that thing to be a rocking atmosphere. It shouldn't take one of those. But, you know, there was so much talk this offseason about just kind of Kirby creating stuff that wasn't there. You had the kid at the combine talking about it. And so at some point, does some of those guys go, you know, okay, well, you know, we've heard this is – he's pulled out speech 112, right? Like, we've heard this one. Again, I don't think he needs it this week. But at some point, you can only kind of cry wolf about how much everybody, you know, is against you before go, well, no, they're not really against us. I mean, we are favored by 10 points in the game. You know what I'm saying? Again, I don't think they need any motivation in this game. But I do think that's an interesting kind of psychological topic for another day about at what point does that sort of lose its edge in terms of its impact, particularly if you're talking about veteran players.
Yeah, I mean, you need that. When you go to Texas on the road after you lost to Alabama, you need it. I mean, this week, I mean, if you lose, you're not going to the playoff for the second year in a row. I don't think you need anything.
I mean, every two-loss team at this point is fighting for their playoff life, except if you're Alabama, because apparently Alabama's okay. But everybody else, you shouldn't need all this extra motivation, no doubt.
Well, that brings up, and I know we got to get moving here, but that brings up an interesting point, and we're going to see it tonight when the playoff rankings come out. What is the narrative this week in the playoff ranking show? Is the narrative quality wins, quality losses, wins versus top 25 teams? Does that shift into something else? You know, whose resume does – is this the week Texas's resume starts to get picked on a little bit, you know, or is this the week where the resumes is like, man, Alabama's got the best resume in the league, even though they're a two-loss team? Like, kind of what's the storyline coming out with the shakeup that's taken place, obviously with Miami's loss and with Georgia losing here? I think that's a pretty fascinating deal on kind of what the angle's going to be, particularly about the SEC in the playoff show later tonight.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, people critiquing Tennessee's strength of schedule and, you know, all that. I mean, you can't play both sides here. Tennessee's strength of schedule is not good right now. Now, the remaining strength of schedule, I think, is like 6 or 7 because, of course, you're on the road to Georgia and Vanderbilt's, you know, much better than what Vanderbilt normally is. But, I mean, if you're going to be critiquing that, you've got to look at the other side too. I mean, Texas has what, one win over a top 25 team this year, and then
well, they have zero right now because Michigan's not ranked.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now Michigan so, I mean, was ranked when they played them. So do you? How much credit do you get for winning at Michigan early in the year? I think that's the thing is that's perplexing to everybody out there. It's like, when do you give somebody credit for a win and not a win?
Yeah, and if like, you give them credit for that, then Tennessee has two more ranked wins because right. NC State and Oklahoma. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. But, again, like it's you say this all the time, Brent. Like, it's made for TV. You got to stretch this sucker out for, you know, four television broadcasts throughout the month of November or whatever. So there are going to be people playing both sides here. And so, you know, keep receipts because if you say one thing one week, you might change – might be singing a different tune the next week. It's just going to kind of be interesting to see what it looks like this week, guys.
Well, and I think the discussion about how many teams or schools going to get in or leagues going to get in is takes a different turn too, right? Because now we're going to get to at some point, assuming there's a bunch of two loss teams and there's a two loss team playing in the SEC championship game. That's assumption. Okay. Now it could be 2-1 loss teams. We'll see what happens the rest of the way. But if you have two lost team in the championship game, where is the value of that? If you're a 3-loss team, but you played in the championship game, are you going to get punished in the SEC and the Big Ten? Well, what are you going to do to the ACC guy? Are you going to punish them? Or is everybody who makes the championship game, you're in? Because if that's the case, then all of a sudden you're looking at the Big Ten and the SEC losing, you know, not getting as many teams in because you're going to give in the championship game loser in the ACC, the championship loser in the Big 12. Like, all of that stuff is in the storylines that's to come. You know, when you give the tease or you give the trailer out there for the new series or the new year of the TV show, that's what's coming next, right? Where does that factor in? So we'll see what that all looks like, Rob.
And I would say another big reason to go ahead and kick it to 16. I mean, I don't know why they were so reluctant to do that in the first place, but I mean, we say that'll solve it, but then we'll be talking about the 3-loss teams that are going to miss it. But anyway, that if you had 4 more slots, I mean, it would alleviate, I mean, all this we're talking about right now, at least from the Tennessee angle.
Certainly feels like right now, Austin, the ACC is a one-team league. The Big 12 is. I'm intrigued to see about Indiana. They play Ohio State this week. Is it this week?
2 weeks. No, it's another week. It's in 2 weeks.
You know, they might win that game. I don't know. But, like, say you come up on the losing end. Say you lose the game no matter what. But also if you just get drilled. I mean, their season's probably over, right? Last time I checked, that strength of schedule was 104th in the nation. So, yeah, it's a lot of different things to be paying attention to this week.
Or what happens if Indiana beats Ohio State?
Yeah, I mean, which is
not a second loss.
Yeah. Again, now you're getting back to the question. I mean, you got the ACC as a one-team bid. I think that's the case too. But, you know, how much are they going to scream about their runner-up in the championship game deserves to be there? And if they're not in, then it's like the question becomes, what's the value of playing a championship game in your conference? Which no commissioner wants that conversation because that game means money to the league, to their individual leagues. So, again, I think that one – that's probably a Thanksgiving week storyline, but that one's coming. That's the storyline that is coming is what's the value of the championship game? And what's the punishment for losing the championship game in every league, not just the two big boy leagues, the Big Ten and the SEC?
Yeah, I agree. That's something that we've all obviously talked about and been kind of wondering about for the last couple of weeks. Last thing before we shift gears, let's go around the room here at the table. Where will Tennessee be ranked tonight in the college football playoffs? Rob, you go first.
I'm bad at this. I mean, I've missed badly the first. Give me 5.
I was going to go 5 as well.
I'll go 5, but they won't be ranked. They won't be seeded 5. They'll be the 5th ranked team.
6.
Remember, they were 7th last week, and they were 8th seed, right?
Yes.
This week, I think they'll be 5th and either 6th or 7th.
Yeah, I tend to lean towards Austin. I think the question is, where's Indiana? You know, where does Indiana stack up with where Tennessee's at right now? How much respect does Indiana get as an unbeaten team? And where does that fall with Tennessee? And then, you know, outside of that, I think the question is, how much of a jump does Alabama make? I'm not saying they're passing Tennessee, but I'm saying how big of a jump do they make with their win? How big of a fall does Georgia take with their loss? And where does Ole Miss, you know, stack up? Where do they move? How far do they move up into the equation of things right now?
Well, here's the other thing. Because of that Georgia having the head-to-head, or I mean Ole Miss having the head-to-head over Georgia, where are they at? Because, I mean, like, that's going to, you know, if Tennessee were to lose this weekend, it might give you a telltale sign about what the committee thinks of the whole head-to-head thing, because Georgia two losses, Ole Miss two losses. Much like if Tennessee loses this weekend, Tennessee two losses, Alabama two losses.
Yeah. So where do you put head-to-head in versus wins over ranked opponents versus bad loss? Because Georgia's two losses are they've lost at Alabama and they lost at Ole Miss. What's Ole Miss's punishment for losing at home to Kentucky, which I would argue, Rob Lewis, is the worst loss in this league for someone vying for a playoff spot?
The deeper we get into the season, the more inconceivable that loss gets. And I'm not saying Bama's loss to Vandy looks great, but it looks a lot better than what happened to Ole Miss at home. Same for Tennessee and Arkansas, just no comparison.
But then again, we got to remember too, fan bases of all teams, right? It's like, well, that head-to-head would work against you, right? Because Tennessee has the head-to-head over Alabama, and so it's there. But, you know, if you play that loss card in there, I mean, obviously Ole Miss has the head-to-head over Georgia, but Ole Miss has lost to Kentucky at home is so much worse. So, I don't know. It's really, really fascinating because you can look at it from so many of these different angles.
Well, I think that's why what you said earlier about keeping receipts, because the message from week to week is not going to be the same message.
Yeah.
And that's where it's drama, but that's where it's maddening for fan bases. That's part of the reason why Florida State lost their mind, right? Like, oh, we don't punish this. And then it gets, oh, yeah, we do punish this. Or, oh, yeah, you get credit for this. Oh, no, you don't get credit for this. That's the maddening part when you're in the middle of it. Now, if you're on the outside looking in, it's great TV, right? Like, hey, it's wonderful. But if you're involved, you know, it's like, you know, it's like you're going to tribal council every week to borrow the old Survivor line, right? Like, it's pretty cool when you're on the outside looking in or you got immunity. Hey, that's pretty funny. But when it's you, it's like, wait a minute, that's not what we were talking about last week. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Now that's a thing? Okay. Was that going to be a thing next week or is it not going to be a thing next week? I'm confused.
A lot to be in store. And, of course, the college football playoff rankings for the second week come out later tonight, and we'll see exactly where Tennessee stacks up. And Austin brings up a good point because that's how it was last year. I mean, Tennessee might be ranked fifth, but seeded sixth or sixth and seeded seventh or whatnot. Ohio State last year or last week was ranked second but seeded fifth because you got to count in for the Power Four champion in there. We're going to get a little basketball talk here to conclude a Tuesday podcast, but first let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Big thanks, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being a part of the show. You can pick up the phone for a free estimate, dial 865-524-5888, or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a couple more minutes left here on this show. Do want to look back at a Tennessee basketball win from over the weekend. A lot of football talk, obviously, but Rob Lewis, Tennessee goes on the road, picks up a nice win over Louisville, 77-55. A couple of guys scoring in double figures, two of which, Chaz Lanier, Zakai Ziegler, 1 point away from 20. Overall, your thoughts on Tennessee's win over Louisville here in the early season?
My biggest takeaway would be that, you know, just, you know, that's what a well-coached team looks like from game one to game two. I mean, I don't know how good Louisville is, but I would say they're not great, you know, a totally new team. But still, I would say they're probably more athletic, a little bit more talented than Gardner Webb. And I thought you saw Tennessee just, you know, really make definite improvement from game one to game two, like you would expect. They were way more efficient on offense, shot over 50% overall, over 50 from three. And if you take out Zakai Ziegler, whose 11 turnovers were just an anomaly. I don't know what was going on with Zakai that day. You know, Tennessee really, you know, took pretty good care of the basketball. I mean, obviously you can't dismiss your point guard's 11 turnovers, but Tennessee was pretty efficient outside of that. You know, thought Okpara and Milicic, you know, were nice inside. Just a real, you know, business-like, workman-like, like win. And again, my biggest takeaway, you saw some definite strides from game one to game two. And I think you're going to see that all through November, December, you know, ups and downs, peaks and valleys, just because, I mean, you've got three new starters who are, you know, veteran, older guys, or not just, you know, freshmen that you're working at 8 or 12 minutes a game. And you got three old guys that you're dependent on, and, you know, it's going to take some time. Oh, and I thought Chaz Lanier was looked really good the other day.
Yeah.
Really,
you know, really I thought Lanier was much better control offensively. I didn't think he pressed. I mean, he took open looks when he had them, but he was committed to doing some stuff in the mid range. To me, Rob, this was just about a mature basketball team. You know, it's a point guard who's played, you know, 480,000 minutes, even though he turned it over. But I mean, he had so much experience. It's Jemai Meshack, who's played so many of these types of games in his career. I thought, while Louisville's got a bunch of new players, and so does Tennessee, I thought Tennessee's veteran experience and maturity showed up in this game from the start. Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I know it was an early game, but Tennessee got out of the gates quickly, never looked back. I just thought it was a very mature afternoon of basketball for Tennessee.
Absolutely. And again, I don't know how good Louisville is, so I don't want to make too much of it. But that was an arena that was, you know, they're behind their new coach. They were ready to explode against a ranked team. I mean, if anytime Louisville gave them any kind of a hint that they were going to get something going, the crowd was into it. And Tennessee just jumped on them right out of the gate. Well, it was 6-0, and, you know, just Tennessee had a double-digit lead almost immediately, and other than one little spurt kind of towards the end of the half, you know, they were in control the whole way. And I think that's a good way to describe it, Hubbard, just mature. I mean, they have a lot of new pieces, but the head of the snake, Zakai Ziegler and Jemai Meshack, I mean, those two guys have played a ton of basketball together. And I don't know if I've ever seen a kid and a coach as connected as Zakai and Rick are. I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch this season. Just, you always talk about hear about a guy being an extension of the coach on the floor, or echoing the coach's message when the coaching around. I mean, there's a strong connection there. I mean, it's a fun part of this team, an interesting aspect of this team.
Rob, I was impressed by Cade Phillips. You know, 21 points off the bench, scored a couple of points, had about 6-7 rebounds. I thought he looked pretty good with his versatility as well. Giving Tennessee a boost off the bench.
Yeah, Cade's going to be a nice piece of the puzzle this year. And JP too. Now, I think, you know, JP's is behind right now. He's been slowed. He's missed a lot of time with an ankle. But yeah, Cade's a nice player. I mean, anybody on that staff is very high on Cade Phillips. And right now, he is, you know, still very much figuring out. But he's a dude that he's better than he knows he is right now. You can kind of see that in a young player. I think you'll see a more confident player in February than you do right now.
Yeah, I mean, Rob, you've talked about it for several weeks. I mean, you like this team in the post just because of the bodies they've got there, that they're going to be able to do some different things. That's not a great – I mean, that's a guard-heavy Louisville team, obviously, and Tennessee took advantage of that in the post. But I mean, they're pretty athletic. I mean, they can do – you know, they can do some different things in the post, and they have, you know, a lot of diversity in terms of the guys' games in the post as well. So how they develop this – the next 2 months is going to be pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah, and I've said this before. I don't think anybody in the program would have just, you know, I'm talking about staff, would have just been beside themselves with worry if they went into this season with Estrella and Chase as their guys in the post. I mean, obviously, you know, they're happy with the way it worked out. They were able to bring in a couple of veterans, and, you know, you can still kind of bring these guys along slowly. But, you know, JP and Cade are two guys that they think have a lot of potential. And to your point, Hubbard, I think they complement each other well. I mean, Okpara is a next level rim protector, but JP and Cade are both shot blockers. And, you know, Milicek's just a different kind of dude than they've had at the four. I mean, you saw him hit a three against Louisville. I mean, I like the combinations that Rick can throw at people in the post this year.
And Rob, let me ask you this one. Sorry, Eric, let me ask this. I mean, Cam Carr, kind of what's that's a slow start, to say the least. Hey. That's probably a surprise to a lot of fans, kind of where that is right now.
It's a surprise to fans. It's not a surprise to anybody in the program. And I don't know if I wrote this in the war room or just in a chat or something, but I mean, this is, to me, is Cam Carr. There's going to be some nights where you're like, damn, that kid's the best player on the floor. And there's going to be some nights where you don't even know he's in the building, which, you know, was Saturday. But he's, you know, I mean, people, you know, have seen it, you know, in bursts and flashes. He's still just putting it together, man. I mean, he's got all the potential in the world. And, you know, I would not look for him to be a consistent guy this year, but there's going to be some nights where he's a big, big factor.
Rob, I know it always starts with defense with Rick Barnes, and then you build the offense off that. I get that. But, man, the on-ball defense was really good. I know they were back-picking Zakai there in that first half, but, you know, Zakai on the defensive end, Jamai on the defensive end. I mean, perimeter defense was outstanding, and, of course, it led to 26% from the field for Louisville. Any surprise in that this early in the season that it looked that good?
Well, not so much because I know they got scalded after.
I'm sure they did.
They were bad against Gardner Webb, but you know that team shot 44%, and you know that. I mean, that's the kind of team that would struggle to shoot 20%. You know, in a game against Tennessee. So again, they were bad against Gardner Webb, so they got scalded on the court. And they're really good on the perimeter, and I think a big reason that is Oak Parra. I mean, they're just not afraid to get up on guys and get ball pressure because they got that dude back there that can erase shots. And you know, Adu could do some of that last year, but to me, Oak Parra he's on a different level in regards to that.
What's your scouting report on the Grizz?
I'm weak. I'm admittedly weak. I'm going to say I like Tennessee's chances.
You got Montana on Wednesday, and then you've got Austin Peay on Sunday.
I think they have a lot of scrappy gym rats, the Grizzlies do. Now, Austin Peay beat Butler the other night, so maybe see what the Govs have under athletic director Gerald Harrison there.
Any chance Rip and Beth show up at the game?
I don't want to talk about it, AP. I don't want to talk about the Yellowstone premiere.
Oh, is that what that reference was?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I can't keep up with the references.
Sunday night, new season of Yellowstone on Sunday nights now.
Is Kevin Costner still on that show?
You know, again, Hubbard, I don't want to talk about it. It's a sore spot. I'm talk about it.
Did it come out this past Sunday? Because I didn't watch
yes,
it.
Yes. It's like it.
All right, Rob, we will not talk about Yellowstone.
I'm going to trudge through it, but it's like watching House of Cards after Kevin Spacey was eliminated off the show.
Right. I mean, they only got what, 5 or 6 episodes left. They just got to end it, right?
Rob, I will not ask you as long as you don't ask me about plus minus. We'll be in good shape. How about that?
I know we got to go, and I know Rob don't want to talk about it, but Rob, 1883 or 1921, which is the better spinoff?
1883, but they're both pale shadows of
1883 was awesome.
Hey, Rob, just remember
pale shadows of Yellowstone at its best.
Just remember, Rob, once is being nice, twice is being blank.
We're not a petting zoo, AP. We are not a petting zoo.
Big thanks, as always, to our friends and our presenting sponsor of the VolQuest podcast. That is Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted source for roofing, siding, windows, garage here in the Knoxville area since 1999, East Tennessee. First choice in roofing, that is Exterior Home Solutions. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We got so much going on the website right now. $1 for 7 days, 50% off. First year, a subscription, that's happening right now, Tennessee, Georgia. You got basketball season as well, plenty of recruiting notes, all that and more on the GQ. If you're listening to us right now, Brent, that's awesome, but just scratching the surface, and there's so much more that can be found day-to-day at VolQuest.com.
Yep, and we'll continue to do that as we follow through whatever is going on with the playoff rankings and all of the storylines that come with that, but it's obviously right now about Tennessee and Georgia. How healthy is Tennessee going to be? We'll continue to follow all of that closely, continue to follow recruiting visits that might happen. Who's going to be at Georgia this weekend of note on the recruiting trail for Tennessee? Lots of stuff out there, right, Austin Price?
You have there's that no, look? There's you no doubt about look? It. There's no doubt about it. All kinds of stuff out there. We'll continue to break down recruiting because, let's face it, I mean, the Georgia's going to continue to swing at Shady Hayward and Christian Gass and some of those kids. We'll see if any of those kids make it to Athens this weekend. And then, you know, we'll continue to talk Yellowstone. We'll break down what members of the VolQuest staff relate to, you know, the Yellowstone cast. I mean, no, I would say Matt Ray is like Teeter, wouldn't you, Rob?
Hey, if we're doing, I don't know what that means. So on that note, I'm gonna bow out. I got nothing.
For once, I'm included in the conversation because I love Yellowstone. All right. Appreciate you guys. Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, Rob Lewis, I'm Eric Kane. Thank you so much for listening and watching and putting up with us here on the VolQuest podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.